Hey, Heather here. Designed to empower individuals to be their best self, the Ron Kitchens Always Forward Leadership Podcast brings fresh understanding to the issues today's leaders are facing and equips them with new perspectives and resources to lead forward. Welcome to today's conversation with Ron Kitchens and Brad Lominick.
Hey, Bob, thanks for being here today. And thanks to everybody for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I am so excited that Bob Goff's here. And those of you that know Bob know that he's one of my favorite people in the world. He's one of the people, my Facebook, you know, thing popped up that tells you, here's what you did in the last year. And apparently I liked Bob Goff quotes a lot because apparently I reposted you more than anybody else. So, and you know, I gave you credit for them. So I didn't plagiarize any of them, but
you can have it. Nobody's had an original thought in 300 years.
Yeah,
so,
no, that's
yep. What I tried to do, I haven't had a quiet time in 20 years. Mine are like super loud. And what I'll do is I'll just say all week long, I'll be like collecting different ideas. I've been thinking about it, and then I'll say, I know they sound right, but are they actually true? And because faith is a big deal for me, I'll like go and just say, like, are these things true? Do they square up with everything I believe to be true? And if they are, then I'll say, what's the simplest way to say that? And that'll be the tweet or that'll be the Instagram post.
You know, I think that's a great formula because I have a lot of leaders like you do who want to know, you know, how can I be more authentic? How do I say things on social media without posting what kind of cheese I had on my grilled cheese sandwich today, which is, you know, good to know, but I'm not sure it gets retweeted much. And, you know, yours comes off so authentic. So I think that's great that you kind of taken us through what that thought process is. It's not just maybe like our president, the first thing that's on the top of your mind, you spell check and check against your own values. And I think that's great leadership for, you know, those that are trying to share their soul with the world.
We're all looking for some of the same things. It's love and connection and a sense of purpose. And so if you can just speak to that in your own life, in your own adventure, to say, what am I learning about love? And what's the definition of love? And so for me, the definition is like, it's just sacrifice and commitment. And people sometimes they say, well, wow, thanks for making things really clear that were really complicated. And I'm like, I'm not the smartest guy in the room. Even if I'm not in a room, I'm not even the smartest guy there. But just say, I don't want a complicated version of love. I just want to know it's sacrifice and commitment, and you sacrifice for your friends, and you do things for the people. You know why you're doing what you're doing. It would be that simple, and you could apply that to your life. Like if you're doing it for applause, you should just join the circus, right? But if you're doing it because it'll actually make a difference in your life or the lives of the people around you you care, then you actually just take the next step. Don't take all of them, just the next step and the next step. And so whether faith is a big deal for you or you do it because you love humanity or dolphins or look, whatever it is that is behind this, just find the most authentic version of you and bring all of you to all of that. Whatever you think will actually last, not things that'll work, things that'll last, because I've done lots of things that I thought would work, and a couple of them worked, but they didn't last. And so I'm just figuring out now at 58, what are the things that are actually going to outlast me?
I think that's gold. That so bears repeating, and it's so tweetable of do the things that last, not just the things that'll work. You know, there's almost no joy these days in things that just work. I know in my own life, and we've shared this, that, you know, I'm struggling with this idea of mindfulness. I'm in a season of so much abundance right now. I'm being able to pour into tens of thousands of leaders every year, and I have a new book coming out, and our business is thriving, that I kind of forgot to enjoy some of it along the way, because some of the other things I was doing were just things that I could do. And I forgot that I'm all about the things that are going to last and are long-term going to change people's lives. And I just think that's so important, what you just said.
Yeah, I think, and then if you get to the motivations behind doing what you do, and it's not prompted by living in a constant sense of guilt, but to just say, hey, where's that coming from? Am I looking for the approval of the people who love me the best, or is it the approval of people that know me the least? And oftentimes what you're doing is like door number two by mistake, and you don't even know it. But then you go like, wow, I've actually been kind of playing to the wrong crowd. You've got this family of yours that is at home and loves you and wants to see the very best for you. But you start doing things to the people that know you not very well at all. They have an image of who you are. So then you start speaking to that image more than living into the person that you're created to be. And hopefully that person, my worldview is that that idea of a new creation, that it's always changing. And if who you are is constantly changing, certainly there'll be some character things that will remain the same. But then everybody who doesn't really know me well is only acquainted with the earlier versions of me. And I've moved on. It would be like going to the high school reunion and having them think I'm still, you know, playing tackle on the football team.
Oh, so they're not going to think that I was completely gorgeous, male model-esque. Yeah, well, okay, they never really thought that. But I keep posting pictures of Brad Pitt, who I knew from high school. And, you know, nobody ever says, oh, Ron, those are your high school pictures. They are my high school pictures, just not of me. So it must be 7 or 8 years ago, two great friends, mutual friends of ours, Jeff Schinnenberger and Brad Lominick, both kind of came to me and said, you have got to know Bob Goff. And I said, well, what's a Bob Goff? Both of them said essentially the same thing. I've never felt as encouraged about the work I'm doing as when I talked to Bob. And, you know, over that time period, you know, I'd have to say the same thing. You are one of the most encouraging people. And I've been in the room with you when you're speaking to college students and even younger groups. I've been in there when, you know, at our own events where you've got 2,000 business leaders in the room, and all of those people walk out of that room feeling encouraged and impacted by your leadership. Has that always been you? Or was there a time that you held that back or developed it? How did you become, you know, the encourager in chief, the male Oprah, you know, of our world?
I'm like, well, I want to point in, you get a car.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'll receive that. But as with you, I just think of all the times that I might aspire to be the kind of man you just described. And I'm going to continue to push towards that. One of the things that I think about are people who've loved me well. There was a musician back in the day, and he died in a plane crash way too soon. But his name was Keith Green. And I wrote him a letter. That's when we didn't have email. There was this thing called, they were white envelopes and they had letters in them. I wrote him this letter and he wrote back to me. And it was only three sentences. I don't even know what he said. But it meant so much to me that he took the time to write three sentences to me. I get 200 or 300 emails a day from people from the back of the book. And everybody gets three sentences and not the same three sentences. Every time I do that, I know why. I know why I'm doing what I'm doing. And it's because Keith Green took time to write me. And I just felt so seen, so acknowledged. And he didn't need to read a lot. And it wasn't fancy prose because, again, I don't remember what he said. But it was just that he did that. And so if you can find these beautiful habits to include in your life and take the best ideas from anybody who's loved you well, and then just repeat those things and just try to get better. Because the underlying premise is that people don't follow vision, they follow availability. And not follow like Facebook follow, but I mean, just like they track, we connect. Everybody wants love and connection and purpose. And when you're loved well and you're connected with, then it just launches you into your purpose to say like, what is it? And instead of telling everybody what their purpose is, tell people about what their character is. And they'll find their purpose. And I'm not saying blow sunshine at each other. I'm just like, see these characteristics in people, tell them what you see, and become a mirror to that. Say, let me tell you what I see when I see you. And then really, just so whether you know them well or you're just learning, I see your joy. I just even see the way you're sitting, your resting position is leaning forward. And it's really beautiful. Like you can tell it's not playing mind games or being a little psychologist. It's just telling people what you see in them and that it comes across as encouraging, but what it is actually just accurate.
No, I know firsthand the power of that. And you won't remember this story, but we were together at an event and I was telling you about my daughter, Kelsey, who was a senior in college at the time, and dealing with the issues of not maybe being respected enough by a boy. And you said, well, let's call her. And he got on the phone with Kelsey and said, awesome. Hey, you are so valuable and you deserve to be respected. And if you set those standards for yourself, the people around you are going to come up to those standards. And I'm paraphrasing it. You were much more eloquent. And so it was great. She was very appreciative of it. But then we roll forward about a year later, and Kelsey had a friend struggling with it. And I said, well, what did you tell her? And she said, well, you won't remember this, but when Bob Goff called me, Bob told me this, and that was the same advice that I gave her. And I thought, I got to remember to tell Bob that story, that our leadership multiplies if we'll just take the time to pour into people.
Yeah, so it's crazy how that works. And it isn't going to be these big, deep, heavy thoughts. I don't know how many times I've walked out of a church and they start telling me words in Hebrew. And I'm like, you lost me. Just tell me how I can love the people around me, how I can live into the most authentic version, this new creation that's now Bob, version 59. And to say, who is that guy? What does he want? What does he want? And why does he want it? And then the second thing, to think behind what do you want and why do you want it is what have you already got and how are you going to get it? Instead of sometimes you can have a list of, well, if I had $1 million or if I had a girlfriend or a wife or like you got to pick between those two. You got one or the other. But if you just say, if I had, say, what do you already got and what are you going to do with it? And so I learned that from people that didn't have a lot. You've seen the same. We've all can relate to somebody who didn't have a lot and did much with it. And so I want to say, just do a quick little, like kind of a roll call of say, what do I have? And most of us have families who love us. But one of the things that can happen in the workplace is that we're so busy providing for our families that we don't provide for our families. It's one of those must be present to win. And so just a word of encouragement for those of you that are working real hard. I mean, good on you. That's just beautiful that you are. And in addition to that, it's not but it's in addition to that, your family, really what they're bargaining for is just you. And you are sufficient. You're enough. You're actually more than enough. And so that's really neat. That Puritan work ethic on steroids. I've got that too. That said, to find times of work and times of rest.
So let me jump ship a little bit here with you. You know, in a country where employee engagement is, 33%, a third of the people, are happy with their job and a third are feeling stuck and they're not where they want to be. What advice would you give those people that want that life where they're feeling engaged and they're all about feeding their souls and their families, but they're just stuck at where they're at?
Well, I've got a great idea. Find the person who loves you the most, write your resignation letter, put a stamp on it, address it to the chairman of the board or whoever your boss is, and then give it to the person you love the most and tell them, if you ever see me not being authentic, not being the best version of me, just mail it in. You don't even have to tell me. I'll find out. Like literally, it'll like not that it'll just keep you honest, but if you see something getting in the way of your marriage or you and your kids or whatever, just say it to your spouse. Just say, mail that puppy in. We start thinking in binary terms that it's just going to be, well, we're going to be living in the back of my Chevy. And the fact is you will not. You know what I mean? You might be in a double wide, but you will not be living in the back of your car if you quit a job that you've grown out of. That's the way it's supposed to work. So what I did for 30 years, I had a law firm. I lived in San Diego. I flew to Seattle every morning, went to work, but I got home for supper every night. And so they called me Mr. G at the airport still. So I knew what I wanted. I knew what I had, and I was willing to do what I needed to do to get what I wanted. What I wanted was to be with my family. So my work as a lawyer took me away, but my desire and my clarity about what I wanted brought me right back. And so if we could continue to do that, you don't have to subscribe to somebody else's list of what they want, but to just say, what do you want? You want to be a famous, like, I don't know, runner. Then, so what do you do with what you got? You got some tennis shoes? Put them on. But if that causes you to run away from your family, then you say, is that something you want to? No guilt, just asking. And if the answer is no, I actually prefer to run away, then we'll like lace them up. But I would say on your jog, I would think about that. And I would say, what is actually going to outlast me? And the next marathon you're training for really is this marathon of loving people well for the rest of your life. And take the people that God's already dropped in your life, instead of looking for new ones, to say, how can I do a good job with the friends I've already got? And for no particular reason, just drop a couple pieces of saltwater taffy in an envelope and say, I was thinking about you. And they're just really beautiful. So don't say I need to drop a Porsche in a box. Just a little one piece of saltwater taffy would be great for me.
Now, am I remembering right that didn't you once send somebody a box of chickens?
Oh, I did. There's this place you can buy a dozen baby ducks for...
Ducks.
Yeah, I sent it to Brad. He was a little bit uptight, I think, at the time about something. And so I thought, hey, this is perfect. I'll duck him. So they just drop them off, and then you just have to raise them. You can't let them just die in the box. You actually then need to... do whatever it takes to make them live. And the great thing about ducks is they go through adolescence in like a day and a half. And then they just like, you know, within 6 weeks, they're flying away. But somebody actually ducked me. They sent me a dozen baby ducks because they'd heard about this. So I mailed them a dozen llamas because llamas are forever.
So, you know, you mentioned that you've had a career as an attorney. You've been internationally active on areas of social justice, particularly around legal justice in Africa, including becoming a consulate. And, you know, I know you're building schools now in Iraq or Iran.
Yeah, we've got a school for 300 Yazidi kids in Iraq, and we're building a hospital right now. We built a Syrian village for all the refugees that have fled in there. And then in Somalia, which kind of a neat caper we're going to do day after tomorrow, like actually just after this event we'll be at together, I chartered a cargo plane. I didn't know you could do that until I did. And you can fit enough food on one huge cargo plane for 50,000 people. So we're going to actually land it in the sand in Western Somalia.
Oh my gosh.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
But that whole idea of just fail trying, don't fail watching. Whatever it is, you don't have to go across an ocean, go across the street. Find somebody who actually just needs somebody to acknowledge them. Literally, you don't, if they're not hungry, you don't need to bring them a hamburger. But if they are, all the better. Literally, if we could just find hungry people, thirsty people, sick people, strange people, naked people, and people in jail. It's not my list. It's what Jesus said. That's the only thing I want to talk to you about when we get to heaven. So like, that's literally my shopping list.
So your wife, Sweet Maria, has an incredible book out, Maria Goff, if our listeners want to go read it. And it was amazingly poignant. And I learned a lot about you and her relationship together, about how you've curated your family. And I love the word curate, how you've curated your family. But one of the things that struck me as I read the book, and I've read it now with a small group as we're kind of talking through some things, was this idea of you're a normal guy. You're, you know, Howard Hughes wasn't your father. You didn't inherit billions. You're not some international jet setter. But you have a sense of dreaming big that I see a lot of people who've dreamt big, but you've taken action on it. And so what advice would you give? And I see a lot of young leaders, and we coach a lot of young leaders who want to do big things, but there's something holding them back. And help me through this. Help me with how I can coach them on executing around their dreams.
Yeah, what a great question. So I would say, and these aren't steps, these are more like, think of a highway and there's these on-ramps and off-ramps. And so what happens is we get on these off-ramps and go into these scary neighborhoods. You'd be like, where am I? That's happened to all of us. I haven't counted them, but I'm guessing there's as many on-ramps back on as there are off-ramps right off. So if you found yourself in an off-ramp, you had a big, beautiful ambition, and you just haven't gotten there, that's just going to happen to all of us. So I would just test it, like we were talking about. Like, why are you doing what you're doing? And then next, like, what do you want and why do you want it? And you said, okay, I know why I'm doing it and I know what I'm doing. Why do I want it? I like it. So you answer that just because it would be good for the earth or good for my family or great for my faith, whatever it is. What do you got right now? Not like a list of all the things you need, but what do you got right now? And then are you willing to do whatever you got to do with what you've got? There's a guy that's going to come to Somalia with us in a couple days. And he wanted to come and bring his camera. And I said, well, that's great. But here's the problem. You've got dreadlocks down to your waist. They'll literally shoot you in the face. And then they'll shoot me in the face because I'm next to you. So we're just so not doing that. So what he did, he cut off all of his dreadlocks. 17 years of these years. He had a Viking burial with these things. They're still on fire, like whatever. But he was willing. He knew why he was doing what he's doing. He knew what he needed to do to get what he want. He was willing to say, what have I got the ability to do? He had a pair of scissors, and then he did what he needed to do to get what he wanted. And it's not like a word rhyme. It's just like, that would be not steps. I've just said four on-ramps back on to this super highway that is your life. And it's pointing in a direction. And I don't hear the voice of God. He doesn't talk to me the way that people say, God told me this or that. What I think he does, he doesn't pass us notes. He passes us each other. I think there's a lot of words that's been written down at him that can be super useful too. But to then just say, what's your big, beautiful ambition? And then when you get a setback or two along the way, don't be discouraged. If there's something big and beautiful you wanted to do for 20 years and then you apply for the job or you go for the Fulbright scholarship or whatever, and then Billy, who's in charge of that, says no, don't fall for the lie that like God shut the door. All that happened was that Billy said no. Go kick the door down. Like literally, you've got this beautiful ambition. Be tenacious. I know when I met Sweet Maria, I mean, like she kept saying no. I kept asking her out on a date. She's like, oh, heck no. But that was just good judgment on her part. But I didn't go away. I didn't make her get a restraining order, but I just knew what I wanted. I knew why I wanted it. I knew what I was going to do if I got it. And then I just took the next step. So take that enthusiasm, that childlike faith, that constant sense of surprise that has brought you all the way through your 10s and 20s and maybe even into your 30s, and then continue. Don't be childlike. Most guys have that nailed, like childish, but be childlike and say like, so what is it that would be the next step? And don't try to take all the steps, just the next one.
I think that's gold. And, you know, I think we talk about Sweet Maria. I mean, you did marry a queen. You married the Rose Bowl queen.
I had hung out with her for 3 years before she told me. We were literally walking through the tournament house in Pasadena, and I saw this painting. I go, that looks just like you. And she didn't say anything. I'm like, no, are you kidding me? She's like, oh, that's old Maria. So here's the deal. To be a new creation, put all the earlier versions of you on the bus and send them far away. And to say to the world, say, who's new Bob? Like, who's the newest creation? Who's new Ron? And then say, what does that new Ron want? What's new Bob want? What's Bob got already that he could use? And if you've got a phone number and that guy's got a cargo plane, then you got an adventure. And you don't do it for adventure. Go raise a teenager. That's enough of an adventure. But to instead to say, this actually might help with a bigger ambition, and it might last because people actually, they're in a really difficult spot. And again, do it across the street. Find one person who you just see them, their garbage cans go out and in every week. why don't you go over and take their garbage cans out next week and then put them back in after the garbage? It's not a home invasion. But I have a neighbor who's this like wildly famous guy. He did that for me for a decade. Every single week, he'd take my garbage cans out. And it wasn't just me. He did it for everybody on the block. Isn't that awesome?
That is
people
awesome.
Like know of him through his business and accomplishments. Nobody knows that for a decade, he took every garbage can of every neighbor out and put them away when the garbage truck left. That's awesome.
That is awesome. You know, and you mentioned earlier that, you know, God doesn't speak to you in words, but through the people that he puts in your life. And so I have that exact same thing. And I'm lucky that he put you in my life.
I got the good end of that deal.
I don't know about that. But Bob, I'm so glad you're with us today. I'm so glad you're my friend. And I'm so glad I get to be with you in a couple days in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And sharing a little joy together in person. So I thank you for the abundance you're bringing into the world. And thank you for being Bob Goff.
All right, man. Just keep loving people big. I think that's for our listeners, too. It's not all the steps, but maybe just that next one. Why should I do what I've been doing? And then take the next courageous step for you. Don't take all of them, just the next courageous one. Hey, thanks for having me on, Ron.
All right. Thanks, Bob. And thanks to all of you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. We hope today's insights will help you develop into the leader you dream to be. To subscribe to Ron's blog or to submit a question for Ron to discuss in a future podcast, visit ronkitchens.com or tweet him at ronkitchens.